The writer Susan Cheever once said that Plymouth is a nice enough town, but it's a town in the middle of nowhere, a town for people on their way to somewhere else. But many locals in the Grafton County town would disagree. After all, Plymouth has been voted one of the best small towns in America. And nowhere is this town pride more conspicuous than in Marking the Moment, a 2.5-hour musical written to kick off the town's 250th anniversary. The show covers the entire history of Plymouth. From its settlement to the founding of its university, there's even a tune about the famous stench that once wafted from the Pemigewasset River.
The Pemmy, it smelled real, real bad. We knew we had to clean it. Together we did what we could to stop that dirty, smelly pit to stop.
The musical is a big undertaking for a small town. The cast of 120 local residents ranged in age from 8 to 77. The musical aims to show the many times Plymouth found itself at a crossroads in New Hampshire history.
Did you know that Samuel Littlemore and Francis Worcester, both of Plymouth, were present in Exeter, New Hampshire in 1787 at a convention called to consider ratifying the new federal constitution of the United States of America?
New Hampshire historian Stuart Wallace says the town's very origin owes much to its being a crossroads.
Plymouth would have been seen automatically as a valuable location because it is right at the mouth of the Baker River where it pours into the Pemigewasset. And so that by itself put Plymouth on the map.
The first settlers arrived in Plymouth from Hollis, New Hampshire, shortly after the French and Indian War. Plymouth grew so quickly, it was granted and incorporated on the same day, July 15th, 1763. The state designated it a half-shire town and built a courthouse. The courthouse gave one of the country's most famous lawyers, Daniel Webster, his first shot.
Oh, do you remember your first trial, Mr. Webster?
One of my earliest trials was played right here in Plymouth. Oh, I tried the case in 1806. My own father sat on the bench.
Webster didn't win that trial, but according to former Historical Society President Betty Batchelder, it was a tough case to try.
At that time, the person he was defending was in prison, and he's had two witnesses that saw what he did, so he didn't have too much to do to defend him. But he did get his execution stayed for 2 months.
So I stood and claimed the privilege to spare Herbert's life the ball.
Yes, it's true.
In 1850, the Boston to Concord to Montreal Railroad line was built right through Plymouth. That brought growth and strengthened industry. The writer Nathaniel Hawthorne was taking the train through Plymouth with former President Franklin Pierce when he fell ill in 1864. The two spent the night at the Pemigewasset House in town, and Hawthorne died the next day. Hawthorne didn't have a chance to write about Plymouth, but another giant in American letters did. Robert Frost, who before becoming a big-name poet, taught at the Plymouth Normal School, now Plymouth State University, for 1 year in 1911. While there, he wrote a poem about the town called Good Hours. Here's Plymouth State University professor Louise McCormick reading it.
I had for my winter evening walk no one at all with whom to talk, but I had the cottages in a row up to their shining eyes in snow.
And he describes leaving his place up here and walking.
That's retired Supreme Court Justice Bill Batchelder, who's lived his entire life in Plymouth.
And he describes the relaxation of seeing the day ending.
I had a glimpse through curtain laces of youthful forms and youthful faces. I had such company outward bound. I went till there were no more cottages found.
And he then does a 180 and describes getting back on the snow and late at night, and all the houses now are secured, the lanterns are out.
Over the snow, my creaking feet disturbed the slumbering village street, like profanation, by their leave, and 10 o'clock of a winter eve.
That's a poem that can be attributed to Plymouth. It suggests that perhaps the evening hours around dinner time can be enriching to the mind and invigorating to the person.
But the man who arguably invigorated Plymouth the most, at least economically, was Elva McQuestion. He figured that if you rubbed the grain off deer hide and applied oil to it, it would make the skin soft and supple. He patented this process, and a glove-making industry was born. Two tanners were Jason Draper and John Maynard. Their fortunes changed one day, in 1882, when a professional baseball player named Arthur Irwin paid a visit in nearby Ashland. Irwin was a shortstop for the Providence Grays. He had broken several fingers, and according to Plymouth State University professor Louise McCormick, Irwin had an idea.
He is summering in the area. He asks if you could possibly produce a glove that would protect his hand.
And from that came the first modern manufactured baseball glove. Draper to Maynard grew and moved their company to Plymouth. The company was the first to have big-time baseball players endorse their glove by stamping their signature on it. Cy Young, Casey Stengel, even Babe Ruth came to Plymouth to back the Draper to Maynard product. And, according to lawyer and Plymouth native Ross Dietschman, they also came to play ball.
This would be the guy who just pitched the sixth game of the World Series would be pitching a week later at the D&M Park in Plymouth.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Babe Ruth has to return to Boston in just a few minutes. He'll only have time to sign a few more autographs. On behalf of the Draper and Maynard Company in Plymouth...
Draper and Maynard closed its doors in 1937, but some of the buildings now house Plymouth's current big business. Education. What started as Plymouth Normal School in 1871 became Plymouth Teachers College, which became Plymouth State College, and then, in 2003, it became Plymouth State University. Every fall, upwards of 4,000 students descend on the town. So to get back to that Susan Cheever quote, a town for people on their way to somewhere else. There may be some truth to that. Plymouth has been an intersection, where a lawyer and poet made their marks before finding stardom, where a national pastime was modernized, and, to this day, where thousands of young students get an education before pushing off into their futures. For New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Keith Shields.